Hi, this is John Griffin from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and you are listening to the Pro Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, hockey fans from around the world. I am Richard Cote, the producer of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. It is the second line edition of the podcast, and you know what that means. Yes, it means we are reunited, and it feels so good. I'm back. You're hearing my voice, as Adam may allude to last week. You may not have wanted to hear my voice, but you're hearing it anyway. I am back on the first, on the second line. It also means I am joined by the publisher of ProHockeyNews.com, Lou Lofredo. Lou, how are you doing?
Well, we're doing well, except after the wins that we had on Wednesday. Our zip code is now located somewhere in the panhandle of Oklahoma. Albuquerque was 74 miles an hour. The Salinas were 94. And up way up north, just outside of Taos, was 117 miles an hour on Wednesday. It was wild here.
Those winds can be all bad, I know.
Crazy. Oh,
I do not – like, I remember there's – of course, your four seasons in New Mexico, you have – you know, your summer, your fall, your winter, and then wind.
Right.
There is no spring. It just wind straight to summer. I do not miss that, but I do miss New Mexico just a little bit. Speaking of things I have missed, the snarky Canadian has joined us, Jacob Doherty. Jacob, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm 100% recovered from my sickness as well. So things are better.
Yeah.
That is great to hear. Listeners, this episode of the Pro Hockey News Podcast is brought to you by My Custom Sports Chair. Head over to mycustomsportschair.com, enter in code PHN15 to get 15% off your order. They got some pretty sweet stuff there. I am actually thinking about ordering myself something to lounge about and watch the rest of the regular season as we start heading down the stretch. I do have a rant this week. Maybe not so much of a rant, but a little bit of a story. And if Jacob and Lou are in the rundown looking at the slug for this, they just know it has something to do with Legos. So back when I was a kid, Legos were basically just a tub and a bunch of bricks, and you build whatever you want. They have now since gone, full sellout. They're making kits that have intricate pieces. They've got thousands of pieces per kit. They're, you know, hundreds of dollars, whatever, what have you. It has changed a lot since I've been a kid. What brings us up, you might ask? Well, my son got his first Lego set. It is a little tiny dump truck, you know, and I'm not sure how much it cost. It was a little present from a friend of ours. So he's thoroughly enjoying it. He loves Legos now, and I'm happy for him. But now I live in constant fear, because now those pieces are going to be strewn about the house. Even if we do keep them as tidy as possible, I know there's going to be one stray brick. One morning, I'm going to be walking across the floor and just step on that sucker. And I will not be responsible for the words that come out of my mouth when that happens. But I know it's inevitable, and I live in that constant fear now. The joys of being a parent of a young child. All right. Now, a segment that I missed last week, and I listened to it, but I didn't feel like I got the full experience without hearing it live. Lou Lofredo has bangers and mash for us this week. Lou, what's going on across the pond?
Oh, across the pond in the EIHL, we have some changes at the top, including the Belfast Giants, who now reside in the number one slot in the EIHL ladder. Through 42 games played, they've picked up 65 points. So they have displaced the Guildford Flames, who have dropped down to second place. But Guildford has two games in hand, and they are just 2 points back at 63. At 62 points, 1 point off of second are the Cardiff Devils. They also have gone through 42 games. And the Sheffield Steelers have played 41 games and are 61 points. So they are 5 points, 4 points back of the first place Giants. Interestingly, Coventry Blaze have come on of late, sort of picked up the pace a bit. And yet, they, despite holding down the fifth position, they are 11 points out of those top four. Manchester Storm have also played better of late, but they're 36 points to provide really no threat to the top four at this point. In the outside the playoff cut, the Glasgow Clan have fallen below the line again with 29 points, and the Dundee Stars are holding up the rest of the league at this point with 24 points through 40 games. So those two teams, and then the Fife Flyers are doing their best, their level best, to stay above the line for the playoffs. And we have some interesting races that are heading down towards the finish of the season, which is really at this point in the EIHL just weeks away. But in between, we have the Challenge Cup, which is one of the pieces of silverware that the EIHL awards on an annual basis. That game will be hosted by the Belfast Giants. And of all things, it is going to be populated by the Fife Flyers that I just mentioned. So it's going to be the Flyers, who are in the eighth position, against the number one Belfast Giants. Interestingly, you know, we've talked about this in the past, that some of these series, some of these challenges are based on aggregate scores over a two-game set. And the Fife Flyers managed to eke out a one-goal advantage on aggregate over the Sheffield Steelers. And it was really an exciting week and a half or so between the Steelers and the Flyers. The Flyers won that game 1-0, and then the Steelers came back in two regular season games and beat the Flyers 1-0 in regulation and then 1-0 on penalties. So the two teams have been playing really tight, good hockey over the last couple of weeks. But again, the Flyers will be visiting the Belfast Giants in another couple of weeks to see who's going to skate off with the Challenge Cup this season. And with that, Richard and Jacob, that is the Bangers and Mash edition for the Second Line this week.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to have to keep picking your brain on those challenge cups, because, man, they still elude me, but you make it sound so simple, and then the next week I forget about it. So,
well, I'm very simple. I've been called a simpleton. So,
your words. Yes, all right, let's look at the ECHL. Take a quick look at the standings since the last time we were here on the Second Line. Taking a look at the North Division, we have the Newfoundland Growlers still in the number one spot with 73 points. The Maine Mariners, just a few points behind them at 61 in second place. The Reading Royals in the number three spot with 59 points. And the Worcester Railers in the number four spot with 53 points. A little bit of a gap between those top four teams in the North. In the South, we have the Jacksonville Icemen on top with 68 points. Let's keep note of them. We'll come back and talk about them here in just a minute. The Florida Everblades, the perennial division winner of the South, now in second place at 65 points. The South Carolina Stingrays in the third spot with 63 points. And the Greensville Swamp Rabbits, love that name, in the number four spot with 63 points. A little bit tighter in the South than in the North, but let's move on to the Central. In the number one spot, we have the Cincinnati Cyclones at 68 points, the Indy Fuel in that number two spot with 66 points, the Toledo Walleye in the number three spot with 66 points, and the Fort Wayne Comets rounding out your top four with 56 points. Now let's look at the Mountain Division, one division I used to follow a little bit closer when Colorado was in there. The Idaho Steelheads are leading the division with 81 points. Wow. Talk about gaps here. Let's talk about the gap between first place and second place. The Wichita Thunder in the number two spot with 56 points, almost a 30-point gap between first place and second place. And yes, they have played the same amount of games. In the number three spot, we have the Kansas City Mavericks with 50 points. And in the number four spot, we have the Utah Grizzlies with 49 points. Lou, let's take a look at these Jacksonville Icemen who have made their way up to the top of the division in the South. Having a pretty good run, 7-2-1 in their last 10. They seem to have, clicked at the right point of the season here.
They really have. And, a few weeks ago, we were talking about the Idaho Steelheads and marveling at the limited number of skaters for the Steelheads who had a minus count on their record so far this season. And just looking through the forwards for the Jacksonville Icemen, minus two, minus four is about the best, is about the worst they can be, except for one particular skater. We'll let him go at a minus eight, but the
Neil
rest
Robinson.
Of this, wow.
Gotta call him out. Gotta call him out.
Poor guy. Well, Neil, just remember it's Richard Cote at prohockeynews.com.
Tweet at me, bro.
That's right. Anyway, Christopher Brown is the leading point getter for the Icemen this season through 50 games. He's got 47 points on 18 goals. And then Brendan Harris is picking up in the second spot with 45 points on 14 goals and 31 assists so far. So, from an offensive point of view, it's fairly well spread out. Quite a few players, skaters on the forward side are picking up with 31 points. And then, if you look at the defensemen, their minus numbers are just one or two, three. So the defensemen are, in fact, picking up the slack for the Icemen here. And, you look at that record of 7-2-1, you can see why they're doing that. And then on the for the goalies, you've got Charles Williams, who's picked up seven wins so far this season. He's got a goals against average of 2.39 and a save percentage of 0.912, which isn't through just 11 games played. This kid's got some pretty good talent here in the nets for the Icemen. So you can see why they are now the leaders of that Southern Division.
Yeah, and this deep into the regular season, just looking at their overall team stats, their goal differential of plus 27. It's good, but I don't think it's overpowering as far as somebody who's been able to they weren't really in the top four as of maybe a month or two ago, and now they're leading the division. Right.
Yeah, this is all a late season run on their part. They have been languishing third, fourth, fifth, I think, for most of this season. And historically, the Icemen have not challenged for a top spot in the division at all in recent years.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, you did name one of our teams back in New Mexico hockey after the Icemen, I believe. I think it was my final season there. We were called the Icemen.
Oh, yes. Excuse me. Yes, that's right. We were the Icemen. That's right.
Yeah. All right. We'll keep a close look at that and what develops there in the South. Very close race in that division. Let's take a look at the AHL. We'll go over the division leaders here before we focus in on one team in particular. In the Atlantic Division, we have the Providence Bruins back on top of the division with 70 points. 1 point behind them, the Hershey Bears. In that number two spot, the Charlotte Checkers with 62 points. In the number three spot, in the Springfield Thunderbirds. They really need to bring back those Simpsons jerseys for more of their games. With 56 points rounding out your top four. In the North Division, the Toronto Marlies are in the lead of that division with 73 points. 55 points is what the number two spot Utica Comets have. 53 points for the Syracuse Crunch in the number three spot. And the Laval Rockets in the number four spot with 51 points. The Texas Stars are leading the Central Division with 66 points. The Milwaukee Admirals in the number two spot with 64 points. The Manitoba Moose in the number three spot with 62 points. And the Rockford Ice Hogs, probably now my second favorite name in the league, with 58 points, rounding out your top four. Let's take a look at the Pacific Division. The Calgary Wranglers maintain their lead on the Pacific Division with 75 points. The Coachella Valley Firebirds, who we're going to talk about here in just a second, in the number two spot with 70 points. The Abbotsford Canucks in the number three spot with 62 points. And the Colorado Eagles are, you know, just wedging their way back into that top four spot with 61 points. All right, let's look at the Coachella Valley Firebirds. They're 5 points back of the Calgary Wranglers, but that's not the biggest story. Like, that is a deficit if, you know, you have maybe a game or two to make up. You know, you might be able to make up 5 points. They have 5 games in hand on the Calgary Wranglers. So if they are able to register a point per game, you know, they're able to tie for that number one spot. If they do better than that, they are taking over that number one spot come the end of the season. Lou, what are your takes on the Firebirds?
You know, there were a couple of things here, not least of which is Max McCormick, left winger out of who's playing for Coachella, is averaging more than a point a game so far this season. In fact, through 46 games, he's got 49 points on 21 goals. And Jesper Froden, who I think is not with the team at the moment, but he's got 44 games under his belt so far this season and 47 points on 25 goals. So, you know, they're being led by those two, McCormick and Froden, and, you know, pretty close behind is Cole Lind. With 45 points in 47 games, and Andrew Polanski has 42 points through 38 games. So his point per game is a little bit better. But I think what you're seeing here is with the AHL, that the offense is really starting to take over as the season is progressing here. What's the difference for between Coachella Valley and third place, Richard?
Oh, yeah, you came to me as I moved away from that page. I'll have it up in just a second.
But you start to see where Coachella Valley is putting distance between themselves and the Abbotsford Canucks.
They got 8 points.
Right. And so, you know, with a shorter season in the AHL than it is in the NHL, you know, their season is coming to a close much more rapidly than is the NHL. And so the Firebirds are certainly set for a playoff position. Whether or not they get a first round bye by overtaking the Wranglers is the question. But, I thought it was interesting that, a true expansion team, this year with the AHL, they are the affiliate for the Seattle Kraken, that they are doing so well. And actually the other thing is that we talk about here, not only on the second line, but on the first line, it really portends good success, I think, for the Kraken moving forward to have that kind of talent at the AHL level.
Yeah. It's good to have a deep farm system, from the top down. Absolutely. As long as you got some deep roster spots,
right?
You know, you're set up for success headed down the road. So, we're going to keep an eye on the Firebirds as we head towards the end of the AHL season. Let's take a look at the NHL. Things in the minors, you know, there have been a few teams jumping up and down. We've had big gaps, you know, between first and second place or first and fourth place. It's just been very messy. So let's get a little bit cleaner. And if you would like to get a little bit cleaner, head over to manscaped.com/prohockeynews. If you'd like to trim up a little bit and make yourself a little bit more presentable, or just make yourself a little bit more comfortable, you can save 20% off your purchase. Yes, NHL. We got we got some trades happening in the last couple of weeks, some big names being thrown around. And we have the trade deadline coming up. I believe it is March 3rd?
4th.
4th. Thank you. By 3 p.m. Eastern, I believe. Or is it 3 p.m. Mountain? I'm trying to remember. I converted it to my Eastern. Is it Eastern?
3 p.m. Eastern. So
okay. 1 p.m. Mountain. All right. I know I did the conversion somewhere. I can't remember what I converted. And yeah, you know, it's just a mess. It's just a mess. I need to clean myself up with some Manscaped. So trade deadline coming up at the end of next week. Like I said, we had a few big names moving in the last couple of weeks. Probably one of the biggest names to move. And we're going to talk about East versus West here in just a minute. The Toronto Maple Leafs made a pretty big move in picking up Ryan O'Reilly from the St. Louis Blues. I mean, this has got to be in an effort to try and compete with Boston in the Atlantic and also, you know, Carolina in the Metropolitan. They got two heavy hitting teams there who are just completely stacked. I don't know. To me, this just screams last effort for Toronto to try and make it into the second round, you know, for the first time in a long time. Jacob, you're a little bit closer to, you know, the Toronto area than we are down here in the States. What's the talk up there in hockey country about this trade, about Ryan O'Reilly going up to the Leafs?
I don't know how much talk there has been, but everyone, to my knowledge, has just been very surprised that this trade took place even. I don't think anyone really said that Ryan O'Reilly was on the market. And then all of a sudden, he's traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs? That's so surprising to me. But overall, Leafs fans are very happy. Ryan O'Reilly is going to be a huge addition to them, especially during the playoffs when you need a guy like that. A very, very, very good two-way forward. So the fact that they were able to fit him in to the Leafs roster cap-wise was a massive miracle.
Now, do you think that this is kind of a long, like, is he going to be signing a longer-term deal with the Maple Leafs, or is this a last part of the season rental to get over that, you know, first-round hump?
I can't imagine, especially with the Leafs cap situation where basically half their team is a UFA or UFAs and they have no cap space to begin with after paying three players over $10 million. I can't imagine that he would sign unless he takes a significant discount, which I would be, once again, very surprised because he's 32. So he has at least like 3-4 good years production-wise in the NHL. And while, yes, he is having a down year right now, he will bounce back, and we know what Ryan O'Reilly is capable of.
And part of it, an interesting part of this trade, and another trade that happened, you know, later on in the week, at least that caught my eye, and something I haven't seen a whole lot of, and don't get me wrong, I haven't taken the deep dive into a lot of these details into like multi-team trades, because this was part of a three-team trade between St. Louis, Toronto, and Minnesota. And I believe Minnesota got some prospects in this trade.
They got fourth round draft pick in 2025.
And they agreed to retain, I believe, 25% of O'Reilly's salary for the year, while St. Louis still retains 50%. Meaning Toronto's only on the hook for a quarter of his salary for the remainder of the year. I haven't seen that happen a lot. So again, I have not been too deep into the weeds of how these dealings go on, but I mean, can you think of a situation like this where the third team steps in and takes on some of the contract of a player who wasn't even part of the club?
Yes. Okay. Arizona took a few last year. Drawing a blank right now, but I remember them picking up one or two in a three-way trade.
Okay. To me, it just seems a little unusual, but I mean, all's fair, right? If you're making the trade, yeah. If everybody agrees, then, you know, sign the paper, it all goes. The other one that I noticed, that Minnesota was also a part of, that they took on 25% was Dmitry Orlov, as he went from the Capitals to Boston. Minnesota also picked up 25% of his salary for the remainder of the year. So Boston's getting Orlov pretty cheap. Toronto's getting O'Reilly pretty cheap. I don't know. This kind of just seems like a big arms race going on in the Atlantic. I don't know. I don't know if the Metropolitan Division needs to be worried or if they just need to stay the course and, you know, play spoiler come the playoffs here.
Well, it's looking like Carolina is probably going to get in on something because
I hope so.
Yeah, because I remember their owner coming out and saying, you know, we're willing to put whatever we need to in order to facilitate a trade. So they're willing to take, they're willing to do whatever that, whatever it takes to win at this rate, which is awesome. It's great to hear that from your owner.
So as we're talking about trades and, you know, NHL teams trying to, you know, acquire the correct pieces as we move towards the postseason, I have a question for you guys. And this is the question that comes up every single season at about this time of the year. Who should be buying? Who should be selling? I mean, obviously, we've seen a lot of the buyers in the East. We haven't seen much going on in the West. I don't know if they're just biding their time or they're kind of stuck and they don't really need to go anywhere. Jacob, I would like for you to start us off in the West. Who needs to be buying?
I would say LA.
Okay.
And Winnipeg and Dallas.
Really? You think Dallas needs to start buying?
Yes.
But what pieces are they missing?
I feel like they are not have, like, their offense is a bit lackluster. It's middle of the pack, but their defense is one of the best in the league.
Right.
And they need to match that if they want to have any playoff success, because when it comes down to game seven, I don't trust that roster in a playoff series. I feel like they can get bodied pretty hard, especially a lot of their forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Especially guys like Jason Robertson, who are a bit on the smaller side. What is his height? Actually, I lied. He wasn't what I'm thinking of. They have some smaller players that are expected to produce a lot. And also a lot of their production is very minimal. It's on like a line or two at most. And it's not really spread out. And that's a concern as when you look into the playoffs. Jason Robertson, Roope Hintz, and Jamie Benn basically have almost all the goals on the team. And yeah, the next closest person has 15, and that's Tyler Seguin. So you just need more depth scoring, I think, in order to just secure yourself a deep playoff run, because Dallas can be a team that could easily get bounced in the first round if they're not careful. And I think they can just add another piece or two and be perfectly fine.
Yeah, looking at the wildcard teams right now that they would potentially face, depending on whether they finish first or second in the West, you got Seattle and you have Colorado. I know Colorado could give them some trouble. Seattle has been a surprise all season long. Yeah, definitely some help up front with the scoring would, you know, obviously help Dallas get past that first round. I don't know if somehow an LA, like if we see LA match up against Dallas, I'm not terribly worried. I feel like that's almost and I'm not going to use this too lightly, but it's almost a free pass for Dallas. I think Dallas can easily take care of LA. If it's a Calgary situation, I mean, really, if it's anybody besides Seattle and Colorado, I think Dallas has an easy time in the first round. They've shown themselves to be, you know, a tough team who can, you know, prevent the puck from going in. And when you got good defense, you know, you can get away with minimal offense. And teams who have struggled, you know, defensively, Calgary, LA hasn't been great. I mean, they have a +1 goal differential, so, you know, they're letting in quite a bit. You know, I feel like, yeah, if you get that kind of matchup, you're getting to the second round. that's when you're going to be seeing like a Winnipeg or a Minnesota or potentially Colorado in the second round. I don't know. Like, I see Dallas potentially being a buyer, but I don't think they're really in dire, like, I don't think they need to be a buyer. I think if they can get away with just kind of maintaining with what everybody else in the division is doing, which nobody seems to really be doing anything except Minnesota buying up people's contracts. I don't think they really need to make a move. In my eyes, I don't see them as a buyer right now.
I'm also not suggesting that they go out and go big game hunting. Same with Los Angeles. I think they're fine as is, but if they can get a decent player for relatively cheap, I think they should go for that. I think they need to go for that in order to guarantee themselves.
Lou, in your mind, is there anybody in the West who needs to be a buyer right now?
I had LA on my buyers list, but I'll tell you who I would like to see be a buyer, the Kraken.
They got the space.
They've got obviously some talent at the AH level that they can AHL level, excuse me, that they can part with and improve the team heading down the stretch. They lost to the Boston Bruins last night 6-5 on a late goal by Jake DeBrusk with about a minute and a half left in the game. It was 6-5. And the two teams literally traded goals the entire 58 and a half minutes of the game. So if they can go toe to toe with the Bruins in a regular season matchup, and they still lost, but if they're only losing by one in a very well contested game, then they may only be one skater away from pushing them over the hump. Whether or not they are, I would like to see the Kraken as a buyer.
You know, Seattle was on my list, and Jacob, LA was on my list. I think if they want to be considered a serious contender, I think Minnesota needs to start making some moves. I think they're kind of stuck treading water in the Central. I'm not going to be terribly surprised if Colorado overtakes them and Minnesota ends up getting a wild card. There's still the potential they could drop out of that wild card race. They haven't been great. I mean, they've won 4 in a row, but they're, 5-4-1 in the last 10, fairly .500 there. The rest of the division, they seem to be flat, and I think they need to bring in some veteran players to kind of pump up that locker room because they have too much talent on that roster to be sitting where they are in third spot. In my opinion.
The donut line picked one member of the donut line picked the Wild to fall out of contention.
Oh, really?
2 weeks ago. What was his name? Oh, it was me.
I think we both did, actually.
Oh, did you?
Okay. I think we both
that's
did
right.
That.
Yeah. That's right, Jacob. We looked at it, and since then, they've won 4 in a row.
The reverse curse of the donut then. Line.
Yeah, apparently we're the heaters.
Then they won.
Yeah. Apparently we're the heaters, not the coolers on the second line. But what's their cap space?
Minnesota's?
In St. Paul, yeah.
Let's see. They got quite a bit of cap space. I believe they have their projected cap space about $2.3 million.
So they've got some space.
Who's on my R, though?
I wonder.
So I mean,
think you're right. They do need to. They need to buy something.
And I mean, like what Jacob was saying for Dallas, I don't think Minnesota needs to make that like a big name, purchase here. I think they need to go after somebody with some playoff experience and maybe a few years to, kick the locker room in the butt and get them going. Cause yeah, I mean, this, there's no reason why this team should be sitting here.
No.
Like they should be second or leading the division. Yeah, that's what I'm seeing out of this team. They look flat. They've looked slow all season. I mean, I think it's most like, to me, it's been embodied pretty much in the season that Marc-Andre Fleury is having. It's just, it's been okay. It hasn't been what it should be.
Exactly.
All right. So those are our buyers in the West. Do we have any sellers in the West? Start with Lou.
Sellers in the West. I think, well, you know, it's the usual suspects in the West. San Jose almost certainly has to sell Carlson. Mm-hmm. Almost certainly going to sell Timo Meier. Those two coming out of the West. The rest of the conference, Chicago.
Yeah. There's been one big name we've been waiting to drop here.
Yeah. And I'm going to leave that to somebody else. One of you two. But I think, San Jose is the biggest seller here. Start all over again. And Carlson does not want to be part of a rebuild.
You know, maybe Carlson is the piece that the Seattle Kraken need. Or maybe he's the piece that Minnesota needs. Jacob, who are sellers in the West?
Well, I've always really wanted to know, especially with all the chatter around Chicago, where is Taylor Radish going to end up?
Do you have any guesses?
Nope. But other than that, for sellers, I think Vancouver should also be a seller. I said this basically the entire season, that Vancouver needs to just bottom out at some point, because they're not getting anywhere. They're spinning their wheels. And now that Elias Pettersson has been becoming more of like actual franchise player and has been developing very well into that. Yeah. They need to figure out a way to get a team around them. And this core isn't it.
So you think, Brock Besser, JT Miller, Connor Garland, you know, those are names that could potentially be sold from Vancouver this season.
I can't
maybe
imagine.
Not JT Miller, because he just signed a huge contract with them, but.
Yeah, I think all those names could be on their way out.
Just like not Quinn Hughes. Quinn Hughes is not you can't get rid of him.
Yeah. And Vancouver could get a decent amount for them as well and use that to help get them out of their bad cap situation. So maybe that might be something that's reserved for the offseason, which I would actually expect them to do that. Just to wait to the offseason, because now they're kind of just in the what do we have phase, part 20. So we're seeing that, and we're also seeing St. Louis selling, but I think St. Louis looks like they're done.
Hey, to be fair for Vancouver, it's what are we doing part 12. Remember, 2011, they did make the Stanley Cup.
Well, what about the 5 years before?
I'm just saying they had that 1 year of brilliance and were never heard from again. Vancouver is kind of been the, you know, we knew this going into the season. This was a team that looked good, promising, you know, and then they get off to a horrible start. They fire their coach. They get rid of Bo Horvat, who had been making noise about wanting to be traded all season long. You know, there are going to be more pieces. This ownership group is basically going to dismantle this team. I think calling them sellers is going to be generous. I think they're basically just going to be giving pieces away just to make room to bring on newer, younger, you know, fresher talent. I just don't know where they're going to get it. Maybe Abbotsford, they're going to bring a bunch of them up. I don't know. But yeah, no, this is a troubled team that, you know, just hasn't had any promise in the last 12 years. So, I don't know if I want to call them a seller or just, you know, a giver at this point, because they're just going to be giving their pieces away. For me, my seller in the West, you guys covered, you covered San Jose, which was on my list, you know, Chicago, definitely. We've been hearing a lot of noise about Patrick Kane and where he's going to end up. He wants to get out, preferably to the Rangers, which would be much to lose delight. I wouldn't have done this a week ago. Honestly, I think, you know, the tea leaves have been read in St. Louis. I think the Blues might be after they get rid of Ryan O'Reilly, I don't think they have much to play for the rest of the season. I think this is a team that might be looking to unload a few more pieces. Is that a Jordan Binnington? And if anybody would want to take up that contract, probably not, but I don't see him being 100% safe.
Jordan Kyra?
I think they have a few pieces to get rid of, and I think they're calling this season a wash, given, you know, where they are, you know, about 12 points clear of the second wild card spot. I think they're calling it. So,
and having gotten rid of Tarasenko and O'Reilly and
yep.
Mikola, defenseman,
I forgot about him. Yes,
This team just isn't playing. Craig Berube laid into the team last night after their overtime loss and blamed the best players for not playing. And mm-hmm. if you've got your coach doing that, that filters up to the general manager where the decisions are going to be made. So, Richard, you might be right. We may not have seen the last of the for sale sign in St. Louis.
Yep. And I mean, you got a very affordable Thomas Greiss backing up Jordan Binnington. He's a UFA next season. He could be a decent backup for a contending team right now. So if anybody's looking to, you know, pad their goaltending depth, you know, you could add on somebody for fairly cheap. So depending on how much St. Louis would want to retain on that.
Hmm.
All right. We've done the West. We've done our buyers and sellers. Let's take a look at the East. We already know a couple of teams who are buyers, Boston and Toronto. And the Islanders, let's not forget them as well. They're already starting to add to their roster as of a few weeks ago. Lou, let's start with you. Who are buyers in the East?
I've been reading about the East from talking heads and pundits, many of whom say that the Rangers are done. I don't think that they are. I think they picked up Tarasenko, who's already paid dividends. Two goals, I think, and two assists. O'Reilly, you know, had the hat trick in his second game with the Leafs. So these moves are paying off for the buyers that we've already had. But I think that the Rangers have one more left in them, and they have enough prospects. They have enough draft picks coming up that they could absorb Patrick Kane. So they are my all of the usual suspects again. But that's who I think. The Rangers, I think the Rangers are the ones who are going to be the big buyers. And I think it's going to be Patrick Kane. I don't think that's not over yet.
No. And as we were talking before we started recording here, in my eyes, I think this whole Patrick Kane deal and, you know, him making noise about wanting to go to New York and New York's desire to have him, I think this is all but a done deal. But I think it's going to happen either right at or right before the trade deadline. Because I don't think anybody's like, this is a piece that they know. Nobody's going to going to be able to acquire. And then as they come up against the trade deadline, they're going to get a better deal from Chicago on it. Not that Chicago has any reason to keep him hostage at this point. But, I mean, if you're trying to shop him around and other teams are just like, just give him to New York, you know, at the end of the day, New York's going to get a good deal on him.
Well, but that's it. And Jacob, jump in. But, who has the assets to give up? And for my money, the Maple Leafs have shot their bolt by getting Ryan O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. They got him to protect the rest of the roster that has not gotten out of the first round. Boston, they go for Dmitry Orlov. And where are they? What other assets are they? Are they going to give up any assets to get somebody like Patrick Kane and slip him into that? The Hurricanes. I don't think the Hurricanes have enough to give up. I think the Rangers are the ones with the assets in reserve.
He also has a no trade clause, so right. Or a no movement clause.
Yes.
So he effectively has a gun to the heads of the Chicago Blackhawks here.
Yeah.
So he can determine where he wants to go, and he can just completely kill them if he just says no.
Yep.
If they have a deal in place that looks great for them. And it looks like he already has. He said no to it sounds like he said no to multiple teams or multiple offers or whatnot. And that will come out well after the deadline or probably in the off season. But Patrick Kane basically is just forcing himself into the New York Rangers roster.
So who's your buyer, Jacob?
Jersey and Carolina.
Yeah.
I think they have to buy.
They need to keep pace with the Atlantic, yeah.
I mean, I don't think Carolina has to buy. I think they should, if they see something they like, they should go for it. And I know they will. But otherwise, I think if they hold, they're perfectly fine in doing so. But I can't say the same for New Jersey. I think New Jersey will have a very tough time in the playoffs. And I think they need some help in the back. So whether that's a guy like Jacob Chychrun or Erik Karlsson, I think they could use some sort of help.
Yeah, they have, let's see, their projected cap space. Do they have any projected cap space?
Probably not.
Not a whole lot, if they have any. But yeah, they do have pieces that they could move. You're right. They could probably use a little bit, a little bit of help on the blue line there.
Like a guy like Dante Fabra, who's a pending restricted free agent or something, could help that team out a lot.
Yeah, you can get a good cheap rental for the remainder of the season. Once we enter the playoffs, let's see who would there be potential first round matchup. It could be what
New Jersey is looking at the Rangers right now.
Yeah.
And I can't really see New Jersey catching up to Carolina, and they're pretty snug in that second spot. So it would either be the Rangers or the Islanders.
I mean, they're only 3 points back, but Carolina has two games in hand. So yeah.
Yeah. And also, it's Carolina. Carolina has been playing very, very, very well.
I think somebody was trying to make an argument that Carolina is the best team in the East, even over Boston right now. I mean, they're both, don't get me wrong, they're both phenomenal teams right now. But I still think Boston is probably the, better positioned team right now.
I'm a bit biased.
I know you are.
But if you were to say in the past week, I would say, Carolina definitely has.
Yeah, 9-1-0 in their last 10. That's not too shabby. There's been just a lot of buying in the East right now. I yeah, it's got to be the Rangers have to have one more up their sleeve. And I have a great feeling it's going to be Patrick Kane. And if that were to happen, New Jersey needs to make a move. Or they could be in big trouble because, I mean, the New York Islanders have, you know, after their acquisition have been playing pretty darn good. I mean, they're 6-2-2 in their last 10. That's another team that could sneak in and possibly knock you to a wild card spot. So, yeah, I think New Jersey is probably the one buyer left in the Eastern Conference. All right, we've done buyers. Let's do sellers. Jacob, who do you have selling in the East?
Well, Washington already sold some, but I think Ottawa really needs to take a good hard look at that roster and sell something to get some more draft capital so they can buy later, because they already have set themselves up for having a big pool of money in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not doing anything this year. And there's no risk in trading a guy like Travis Hamonic to get something back, hopefully. But they just... They need to get something back from the season. Okay. Maybe a Claude Giroux, while he still has value, could service another team. But they would need to retain salary, and he's signed for 3 years, so that would also be a bit dicey.
Okay.
Other than that, teams that should sell are also Philadelphia and Montreal. Montreal has a lot of pieces to sell, but can they move them? That's a different story.
Yeah, that's a different kettle of fish there. Lou, who are your sellers in the East?
I think, I don't know if you'll be surprised by it, but Kapanen was placed on waivers by the Pittsburgh Penguins today. He has one goal in his last 15 games. I think the Penguins are about to become huge sellers.
Okay.
The question is whether or not management is ready to pull the pin on this season. They've lost four in a row. They are on the outside looking in, and they lost last night 7-2 to the Edmonton Oilers, and it wasn't even close. It was just they took a 1-0 lead and then gave up seven straight. Chris Letang had both goals in the game last night for the Penguins, so. So Malkin isn't scoring, Crosby isn't scoring, and if those two aren't going to get into the mix on the offense, then I would look for Pittsburgh to be a seller. Okay. There are lots of others, but I don't know who has assets to sell.
Right.
And yourself.
Yeah, I mean, Jacob touched on it. I think Philadelphia is going to be a big seller come the trade deadline. They keep building up these teams that look good. They brought in some coaching that maybe could have gotten them through the first year, but not even the mighty Tortorella has been able to turn this club around. They have assets to move. And they're not doing anything with this season. Looking at their upcoming draft year, they have picks in all the rounds except the second round, including two in the third, two in the fourth. So if they're looking to pick up maybe some draft picks to help try and get this team up to where they need to be come next season, I think this is the time for them to move some assets to try and do that. Who it's going to be, I don't know, because they have quite a few contracts that are going deep and expensive. So, and a few no movement or a modified no trade clauses. So the piece that they need to move, I don't know what it's going to be, but I feel like they need to get rid of something and they need to start building over in Philadelphia. Other than that, I mean, Jacob hit it on the head. Ottawa needs to do something. Columbus, I would say they're a seller, but I don't think they have anything anybody wants, or at least anything they can move that anybody wants. Right. So, you know, they're going to tread water.
Yeah. So just to, this isn't a challenge to you, Jacob, but, you know, Ottawa came into this season with all sorts of high hopes. And again, I'm not arguing with you. I don't disagree with you. But how did they get to the point where they are sellers in your mind?
I just look at where they're at in the play, in the standings, as well as their dismal carousel of goaltenders that they have.
Cam Talbot is gone.
He just came back, actually.
Oh, okay.
But previously, they've been rotating like Phil Forsberg, Sogard, and I think another guy.
And Forsberg was stretchered off the ice.
Yeah, he's gone for the season.
Yeah, both MCLs, I think. But it's terribly disappointing considering the enthusiasm that there was in Ottawa for this season, and now to have them be a seller is giving up on.
I think we also overestimated their defensive capacity. Their defense on paper looked fine at the start of the season, and then it just didn't pan out, unfortunately, which happens to a lot of teams. But especially teams like Columbus, for example, their defense looked fine till all of a sudden it wasn't. So
until they started playing.
So
until they took the ice.
I think that Ottawa, part of me now is thinking, oh, what if Ottawa just holds? What if Ottawa just decides, we're just going to take another year, let our young guys, which they have a plethora of, just continue to develop, get some more time at the NHL level, just call it a year, whatever. We got our first. Let's just hope that's a decent first and try again. Especially with Josh Norris being out
for the season.
I think he played, two games this season or something? Eight games this season.
Eight games, yeah.
He got – that was really unfortunate because he came back and then got hurt again re-aggravated.
Re-aggravated, yeah. Okay. it wasn't the dumpster fire that we – they weren't the dumpster fire that we had predicted in the beginning. And so it's unfortunate. So, okay.
You know what isn't unfortunate? The deal you can get on the Chicago Wolves merchandise if you head over to chicagowolvesstore.com. Enter in code PHN15 to get 15% off your purchase of some sweet Chicago Wolves merchandise. Fellas, I think it is time for our Bet99 Picks of the Week. Jacob, shall I hand it over to you?
You can.
I hand it over.
Okay, you do dare. So last edition, we had some games where I was the only one who went positive. So the sports ball game, we're not going to count because it was rigged.
No, it wasn't.
NFL sports ball game, it was. Don't worry.
We all know Rihanna won the game.
So I came off the week 4-1. Whereas Richard and Lou went 2-3, so I'm starting to get within spitting distance of them. So now it's actually a close race. And Lou and Richard are still tied.
Wow. It's so a close race between us. We live in mediocrity here, so.
Hey, you know what? That's well over 500. That's pretty good.
It's three games over.
Five games over. Yeah, you guys are doing great on the season.
Okay.
And I'm still catching up. So for the first game, we have Pittsburgh at St. Louis. Lou, I'm going to start with you.
You know what? I'm going to take St. Louis. Berube had he ranted about his players, and they had a let's get together meeting today. Players did, and so I'll take the Blues to hand the Penguins their fifth straight loss.
Okay, Richard, what do you got?
I'm going against Lou. I am going to go with the Penguins in this one. Penguins are, you said it was St. Louis at Pittsburgh or Pittsburgh at St. Louis?
Pittsburgh at St. Louis.
Okay, so they're both mediocre. Pittsburgh is 12-12-5 on the road. St. Louis 13-13-3 at home. Yeah, I'm still going to go Pittsburgh. You got to snap that losing streak.
Okay. And I'm going to go for St. Louis. I think I really like the core that St. Louis still has. I'm hoping that they can pull it around or at least get a win against Pittsburgh Penguins. Next game we got is Ottawa at Montreal. Richard, I'll start with you this time.
You're picking all the teams who are selling off everything, right? This is the showcase to show what kind of talent they have to unload before the trade deadline.
Can you play your way out of the basement game?
I think there's no hope for either one of these clubs. I'll go Ottawa.
No, for the players.
Oh, yeah. I'll go Ottawa.
Okay. Who do you got?
I'm going to take Montreal. I have no reason.
I had no reason to go with Ottawa.
I'm a homer, so I'm going to go Montreal because that's more reason than I have to pick anything else. So another actual really good game here is Dallas at the Vegas Golden Knights, like a potential battle for the top spot in the West. Lou, who do you got?
I'm going to take the Golden Knights because I was listening to the both of you talking about the Dallas Stars, and I've lost faith in them in the latter part of the season. So and Vegas is starting to come back from their funk. Give me Vegas.
Okay, Richard, who do you have?
I'm going to go with Dallas. Not because I have a whole lot of faith in them to, you know, in a series, they would not hold a candle against Vegas, but I think in a one game and, you know, a game that they really need to get back into it and to, you know, start solidifying their lead in the division, I think they're going to be able to pull this one out. So I'll go Dallas. By the way, fun fact, the Vegas Golden Knights with 75 points would be the number one wild card in the Eastern Conference.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
That is all. Your fun fact of the day.
That was very fun.
Yeah. Okay.
I do like the Dallas Stars home or away record, but in their last 10, they've only won two games. So I have to go Vegas here. Dallas just needs to turn it around here. But if they do win, that would be a big statement win for them.
Yeah.
And our final game on Saturday, we still have two more, but final game for Saturday is Chicago at San Jose. Another duel of who can get out of the basement for the players, not for teams or fan bases or management.
Yeah. Okay. Who goes first?
Richard. Richard goes first.
I usually do this by, you know, home record or by winning streak. If I go by winning streak, I have to go Chicago, but let it be noted, San Jose at home is 6-15-7. Chicago on the road is 8-16-2. Not a lot of confidence in either team, but you know what? Chicago has the winning streak or the hot streak right now. I'll go Chicago.
Let you?
No, I'm going to take the Sharks.
Okay.
I don't know why. Just all of a sudden, I didn't want to be staring down the barrel of a loss on Saturday. So I just have a feeling San Jose.
I'm going to go Chicago. Patrick Kane looks very dominant so far the past few games. So.
What is he going to play?
Is he going to be playing there?
Oh, no. Well, I already said Chicago, but you're right because he got held out of practice.
Okay.
Well, I cherished my Tyler Raddish, so.
Yeah.
So because I couldn't find a statistically close game on Saturday with the remaining games, I decided to go for the 1 p.m. Mountain Time matinee game between Washington and Buffalo on Sunday. So, Lou, I'm going to start with you. Who do you have?
Buffalo. The Caps are done.
Oof. Richard?
Can I pick the Kraken?
Sure, I guess.
Give me Buffalo.
You know, Ovi's back, so they finally have an offense now. So who knows? Maybe Washington will squeak out a win against just some boards and some pads in front of a net. Sometimes.
Jeez. Yeah. Okay.
So that's it for the picks of the week. If you'd like to follow along, please follow on with the hashtag PHN Picks on our account. That is PHN Podcast on Twitter.
All right.
So thanks to Bet99.
Okay. That takes us to parting thoughts. Jacob, what's on your mind?
Man, what is on my mind? Not a lot these days. Just finished reading week, so going back to school, and it's going to be chaos for the next few months, and I'm looking forward to it.
Mm. All right. Cool. Lou, follow that.
Wow. I have my parting thought is I've never been a huge country fan. Country music fan. I do have a meager selection of country music, Dwight Yoakam, Black Hawk, that sort of thing. But the last few months, I have been playing lead guitar for a country band here, and it's an absolute blast. So I am not sold on country. I still like my dirty, distorted sound. But playing country has been fun.
Oh, we'll have to sample some of that here on the podcast at some point.
Back to you.
Well, you know, I hate to end the podcast on a little bit of a downer note, but this is kind of an important topic for me. And it's kind of something I had to deal with this past week. And it has to do with the danger to people in my profession, to journalists.
Oh, yeah.
As we saw in Orlando on Wednesday, reporter Dylan Lyons was shot and killed while covering a shooting in Orlando that actually ended up killing a 9-year-old girl as well and injuring her mother. Another photographer, I don't believe he was part of the crew there, with Dylan, but Jesse Walden was injured and was sent to the hospital. It doesn't sound like the shooter had any sort of relation with any of the victims. There's still no clear motive as to what led up to this shooting. But it just brings forth to top of mind for me, the danger that a lot of my colleagues go into on a daily basis that a lot of people just don't realize. So, yeah. Thinking a lot about my colleagues out in Orlando and, you know, as if this world didn't need to get small, you know, even smaller for me. Jesse Walden was a former photographer for one of my first stations back in Albuquerque. He used to work for KOB, the NBC affiliate there. That was one of the first stations where I got my start before I came here to Denver. You know, it's just, it is a small knit community, even though there are, you know, thousands of journalists across the country. We always seem to have a common thread. So, you know, sending my thoughts out to the crews out in Orlando and to all of my colleagues in the journalism profession. So,
and to you too.
Thank you.
Yeah, gotcha.
All right. So again, sorry to end on a downer note, but you know, again, a serious topic for me, something I take very seriously. But thank you for listening to this episode of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. Thank you to our sponsors, Bet99, the Chicago Wolves merchandise store. Manscaped, LDE Affinity Jewelry, and My Custom Sports Chair. Thank you, listeners, for making us a part of your routine wherever you listen to us. And for Jacob Doherty and Lou Lafredo, listeners, I will see you next week on The First Line.